Now, as we go into the 16th chapter, though, this continues to be the same prophecy about the same country, and he just gives some more details about it now. Send you the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah to the wilderness unto the mount of the daughter of Zion. The best I can understand from this verse is it's talking about the ruler of Moab and that how he is going to escape from his land into the land of Judea. He will have to flee his land into Judea. Send you the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah. Now, these people were very well noted for the fact that they did keep sheep. And this could be then used as a figure to apply to the ruler of the country. The land from Selah. All I can learn about Selah is that it quite possibly is this city known as Petra, which was a city built in the rock there in Moab. It was surrounded by a kind of a rock amphitheater, and you had to go through some deep crevices or cliffs to get down to it so that it was well fortified. And more recent archaeologists have discovered that there was quite a civilization there at Petra. And this is another name for that city, and it was in Moab, and it might very well have been where the ruler would have been. Well, he's to go to the wilderness, which would be the desert of the desolate country, the wild country, unto the mount of the daughter of Zion, which would be Israel. So he fled from Moab and sought refuge in Israel. Now the next verse is still talking of a similar thing. For it shall be that as a wandering bird cast out of the nest, so the daughters of Moab shall be at the fords of Arnon. Arnon was a place where they could ford the river and get across from Moab into Judea. And so there would be women who would leave. He calls them the daughters of Moab. They would flee the country, and they would be just like a wandering bird cast out of the nest as they tried to flee. And the thought that comes to my mind here is somebody who really is not used to any kind of wild travel or travel through wild country, who's really not used to flight or having their lives in danger or a hardship, but they've had a pretty soft, easy life, and they're now for the first time like a bird cast from the nest. And if you've seen a bird leave the nest for the first time, you'll know that many times he can't even fly. He's at the mercy of cats or dogs or anything else that might bother him. They'll try to fly and they'll run into something, or they'll light on top of a building and they don't know anything to do but just hang on for dear life. And so that's what these daughters of Moab were like as they tried to flee. And they were found there at the fords of Arnon, fleeing, going into Judea. And so in the next verse, he seems to be talking to Judea and telling Judea to receive these fugitives, to receive these people who are fleeing the great onslaught of their country. He says, take counsel, execute judgment, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday. Hide the outcast. Bewray not him that wandereth. Now that's to Judah. Judah is to take counsel and to execute judgment. That is there to do the wisest thing to be done here. Well, what was the wise thing to do? The wise thing was to give these people who fled out of there, to give the remnant that was left of Moab, give them some kind of shelter and security. So he says, and it took me about 15 minutes trying to figure out what this meant till it finally struck me. He says, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday. In other words, you hide these people under your shadow. And you make a shadow that is so, such a blanket, that is so impenetrable, that it's just like night in the midst of the noonday. So that those who flee into your shadow will be hidden, like they're in the dark. But it's really not the dark, it's just your shadow that they've fled to and sought refuge at. And so he says, hide the outcast. Betray not him that wandereth. So here we have the king fleeing across the wilderness, and we have the daughters as the bird cast out of the nest, fording there at Arnon and going in, and now Israel is told to receive him. Let mine outcast dwell with thee, Moab. Now this is not a very properly translated place here, as I understand it. It's really saying, let my outcast Moab dwell with thee, meaning Israel or Judea. Be thou a covert to them from the face of the spoiler. That is, you be a refuge, you be a protection for them from the face of the spoiler. For the extortioner is at an end. The spoiler ceaseth. The oppressors are consumed out of the land. So Judah is told to receive Moab. But now this phrase about the extortioner is at an end, the spoiler ceaseth, the oppressors are consumed out of the land. These are thought to be expressions reminding Judah of the very recent attack by the Assyrians upon their land, and how close they came to being destroyed, just like Moab is now being destroyed, but their destruction was averted. God protected them. And so now then Judah can be used as a place of refuge, a place of safety, because the extortioner is at an end, the spoiler ceaseth, and the oppressors are consumed out of the land. He's not really saying to receive the fugitives because the oppressor is no longer in Moab, because that's where the oppressor was. But come over here, the oppressor's not here anymore. In Judah. And in mercy shall the throne be established. Now this is talking about the throne of David. And it must be talking about Hezekiah. Hezekiah was the king here. He was the benevolent king. He was the strong king. So and in mercy shall the throne be established. And he shall sit upon it in truth in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking judgment and hasting righteousness. And these statements are statements that a person should be able to make about Hezekiah, because he was probably the best of all the kings they had after the divided kingdom. The American translation says of that verse, a throne will be established by kindness. King James says, shall the throne be established in mercy. So here was a throne now that was not a result of conquering force, not a result of oppression or wickedness, but a throne that was a result of kindness or mercy. And on it will sit in faithfulness in the tent of David, a judge who seeks what is right and is swift to do justice. So this is the kind of a country that they were fleeing into. Now, if this happened, if these refugees sought refuge in Judah, then you can see why this prophecy is given to give the men of God of the day an opportunity to know what's going on and to know what to expect. We have heard of the pride of Moab. Now, this sixth verse is about their pride. He is very proud. Even his hardiness and his pride and his wrath, but his lies shall not be so. Now Moab was a very proud people, and they were apparently noted for the pride that they had, and this is not a good thing. Pride nearly always means that a person thinks more highly of himself than he ought. It nearly always means that he is distorted in his interpretation of the truth, and he thinks certain things are one way when really they're not that way. And so he's very proud, even his hardiness, his pride, and his wrath, but his lies shall not be so. So all of these thoughts about himself, all this pride and hardiness and arrogance, were really lies. And he said his lies shall not be so. It's not truly the way things are. He's not really that great. Moab is not really that great. Therefore shall Moab howl for Moab. Everyone shall howl, for the foundations of Kirhariseth shall you mourn, surely they are stricken. Now the word foundations here, it means men. For the men of Kirhariseth shall you mourn, surely they are stricken. And, you know, we're told in the Bible that pride goeth before a fall, and hardiness goeth before destruction. And so that seems to be one of the problems that Moab had. They were a proud, haughty people. And all they were doing is setting themselves up for the fall. And as a result of their pride, since because it wasn't really truly the truth about them being that great, they were really a lie. As a result of it, he says, therefore shall Moab howl for Moab, and everyone shall howl. For the men of this city shall you mourn, surely they are stricken. So it's going to be quite a difference of the pride and the haughtiness and the arrogance that they had whenever then everyone started howling and crying for themselves. Now in verse 8 he gives an interesting allusion here to the wines of Moab. For the fields of Heshbon languish, and the vine of Sibmah, the lords of the heathen have broken down the principal plants thereof. They are come even unto Jazer. They wander through the wilderness. Her branches are stretched out. They are gone over the sea. The commentators claim that there are some really mistranslations and mistranspositions of this from the original manuscripts. But let me read from this American translation. For the vineyards of Heshbon languish, and the vine of Sibmah, the red clusters of which laid prostrate the lords of nations. So here where he says in our 8th verse, the lords of the heathen have broken down the principal plant thereof, what that really is saying is that the wine of this country was so good and it was so famous for this wine that the lords of all of the principal nations got drunk on it. They all drank of it and got drunk on it. The red clusters of which lay prostrate the lords of nations. So the lords of the great nations. This was wine for the kings. Wine for the lords. It was what they drank when they got drunk. As far as Jazer they reached, they strayed to the desert. Her tendrils spread forth, they passed over the sea. Now, that would be saying that these wines, these vineyards, figuratively speaking, because of the fact that the wines carried, even got through the wilderness and were stretched out and went over the sea to the other side of the Dead Sea and were spread to other countries. Well, the country that produced that, the fields of Heshbon and the vine of Sibmah, they would languish. And they would fail to produce their fruit. Verse 9, therefore I will bewail with the weeping of Jazer, the vine of Sibmah. I will water thee with my tears, O Heshbon and Elilah, for the shouting, for thy summer fruits, and for thy harvest is fallen. They were going to stop producing. It seemed that one of the most famous things they had was this wine. And they were going to stop producing this wine as a result of their destruction. And so he says, for the shouting, for thy summer fruits, and for thy harvest is fallen. And some say that this is an allusion now to the treading out of the grapes. And as they would tread these grapes out, they would give a shout of joy, a shout of the harvest. And but he said the shouting's not going to be. All gladness is taken away and joy out of the plentiful field. And in the vineyard there shall be no singing, neither shall there be shouting. The treaders shall tread out no wine in their presses. I have made their vintage shouting to cease. So just a picture of, instead of the joyful shout of the workers treading out the wine in the wine press, there's not going to be any shouting. Then in verse 11 he says, wherefore my bowels shall sound like a harp for Moab, and mine inward parts for Kir-Haresh. Now what he's saying here is that I'm going to be trembling, and my bowels are going to be ringing. I'm going to be trembling so bad. It's going to make my bowels ring, and they'll sound like a harp. And my inward parts, another version says, my heart shall sound like a flute. So that's the prophet now, that's Isaiah speaking of his own feeling, his own fear, his own awe at picture that's given here as to what's going to happen to Moab. Then in the last three verses we have, or last four verses, three verses, we have the kind of the conclusion now. And it shall come to pass, when it is seen that Moab is weary on the high place, that he shall come to his sanctuary to pray, but he shall not prevail. Moab is going to eventually realize that they've been doing the wrong thing. They're worshiping the wrong God. They come to the high place, and this word high place probably does mean the place of worship. They come to worship and they're weary. They've been there so long, they're weary. They're working at it. They're trying. And he shall come to his sanctuary to pray, but he shall not prevail. He's not going to win. He's not going to be allowed to survive this onslaught as a result of his worship and as a result of his praying, simply because he's praying to the wrong gods. This is the word that the Lord has spoken concerning Moab since that time. But now the Lord has spoken, saying, within 3 years, as the years of an hireling and the glory of Moab shall be contemned, and that word means in contempt, shall the glory of Moab be in contempt with all that great multitude, and the remnant shall be very small and feeble. Now what this is saying is that it's going to happen within 3 years. And it's going to be 3 years like the hireling counts 3 years. 3 years as of an hireling. Well, what kind of 3 years is that? It means that an hireling is going to not go one day over. If you hire somebody to work for you for 3 years, and here he is counting off the days, you know, he's counting those days off. Whenever 3 years is up, he's through. And so it's not going to be, an approximate 3 years or a figurative 3 years. It's going to be a literal 3 years, just like the hireling counts 3 years. And I'm sure the people of that day were well aware of what a hireling would do if he was obligated for 3 years. When that 3 years was up, he'd cease his obligation. Well, when that happened, he said the glory of Moab will be in contempt with all the great multitude, or in spite of all the great multitude. They're going to be cut to shreds. The numbers are not going to mean anything. And the remnant, those few that are left, the remnant, shall be very small and feeble. So they start out with a great multitude, and they'll end up with a very small and feeble remnant. And from the way he described this, they would be the ones who fled into the shadow of Judea for refuge. The next chapter is starting about the doom of Israel. And I think it'd be well if we just probably would go ahead and stop there rather than get into that next chapter and not be able to finish it. Because it's 14 verses and it'd be kind of losing the thought to start it and then not be able to finish it. So we'll go ahead and stop at the end of the 16th chapter, then Lord willing we'll begin with the 17th chapter. Anybody have any questions or any comments about what we covered tonight? Thank you. I thought Ruth was in it.
She had Alvin and Alvin at Jesse's son Jesse, and Jesse was son David was son Jesse.
Yeah, so Ruth was really David's grandmother then, huh? Mm-hmm. Good. Now, last Sunday, in giving the story of Enoch, I made the statement that Enoch was the son of Adam. I mean, the son of Cain. And that he bound to have had to talk against some of the things that his father did. But the Enoch that we read of in Hebrews 11 was not the son of Cain. There was another Enoch who was the son of Cain, but the Enoch that we read of in Hebrews 11 was the descendant of Seth, and his father was, Jezreel.
Jared.
And he was a nephew of Cain, but he wasn't the son of Cain. And then he went and on, he had Methuselah. Methuselah had Lamech, and then Lamech had Noah. So I did want to correct that. I looked up the word Enoch, but I had the wrong Enoch. They're both spelled just alike. Well, if there's nothing further, then next time, Lord willing, we'll begin with this 17th chapter of Isaiah.